I love reading about church history and studying about church history. And we have got up into the 1500s with someone very influential as far as the Reformation, and that's John Calvin. He was born in 1509, so we're in the early part of the 1500s. And of course, he was, like many at that time, he was Catholic. But he began to preach the idea that the church, the Roman Catholic Church, needed to be reformed. And so he laid down some of the principles that were foundational to the Protestant movement. And of course, Calvinism is one of the most prominent religious systems of faith in the world today. We'll talk a little bit more about it later, but he even started a college that became very popular in the western part of Europe, and it was to promote his ideas that the Roman Catholic Church were doing many things that were unscriptural, that didn't have any basis in the Bible at all. He believed that the Bible should be the only guide, but he thought that only certain people should be allowed to interpret it. He was very adamant about the Ten Commandments. Discipline was a big part of his belief as well. He believed that every church member should take the communion at least four times a year, so once a quarter. And in about 1536 is when he came up with what is today called Calvinism, which is remembered by the title TULIP, T-U-L-I-P. T stands for total hereditary depravity. He believed that everybody that's born is born a sinner. So whenever a baby's born, it's born a sinner because it inherits Adam's sin. Of course, we know that's not true, but that is something that millions and millions of Protestants today worldwide believe. The U stood for unconditional election, which means predestination. He believed and taught that people were predestined to either be saved or to be lost, and there wasn't anything you could do about it. In other words, if you were predestined by God to be saved, then you could live any way you wanted, you were going to be saved. And if you were predestined to be lost, then you were going to be lost, period, regardless of how good a person you were. Bobby, oh, I'm sorry.
How are you ever going to know that?
I know, right. That's an excellent point.
Bobby,
yes?
Something else about Calvinism, because I grew up with this. Mm-hmm. Okay, when you're supposed to have some sort of religious experience when you before you're baptized, like God writes your name in lightning across the sky.
Right, right.
And now, whenever that happens, when you talk, you speak for God, so that if you say you have a religious experience, you can write part of the Bible because God speaks to you.
Okay.
Okay, so it's a real... it's a real muddled kind of thing because you get to where you follow preachers instead of God.
That's a good point. Right. Very good point.
When I was growing up, Ben Bogard said it.
Oh, yes. That's right.
That was it.
He was one of the most famous ones. That's true.
Yeah.
He had many, many debates in the state of Arkansas with all kinds of different preachers. And there are kind of offshoots of Calvinism, you know, where people have kind of taken these five basic ideas and then changed them a little bit. So that was the T and the U. The L stood for limited atonement, which means Jesus only died for the elect, basically. Jesus only died for certain people, all right? The I in TULIP stands for irresistible grace. That means if you were predestined to be saved, you couldn't do anything about it. You were going to be saved. It was irresistible. All right? And like Skip brought up, normally people would have religious experiences. And this idea of having a religious experience, we'll see this later on when we talk about the restoration movement in the United States, but some people saw that there was something wrong with Calvinism because they could never have a religious experience. They wanted to have a religious experience. They wanted to have a religious experience. They could never have one. And so we'll see some of the people that were involved in that, especially in the 1700s and 1800s. And then the P stood for perseverance of the saints. That basically is the once saved, always saved that you hear a lot about it. But most all of that is traced back to him, or he was the one that kind of formalized it. And that kind of became the basis for the Protestant Reformation movement. He died in 1564. And the Catholic Church came back with, because his teachings were becoming very popular and people were believing them, they came back with and had a council. It's called the Council of Trent. And that council basically said everything he was saying was false. All right? The council, the Roman Catholic Church Council, said, no, church tradition is just as authoritative as the Bible. You're not justified by faith. The papacy, the popes, have supreme power, and so forth. So it was basically they met to try and check the Protestant movement. But of course it didn't work. I mean, once the Protestant, that Reformation started, reforming the church, they weren't trying to restore the New Testament church. They were just trying to take the Roman Catholic Church and reform it in the ways that they thought it needed to be reformed. Well, obviously that meant different things to different people. 1572, Thomas Cartwright began what became the Presbyterian Church of England. And even today when you see a lot of Presbyterian church buildings, they look like the ones in England. Denise and I just saw one the other day. I don't remember where it was, but the one in Neosho, if you go by it, looks like the ones that you would see in England. So that architecture, all right, came over here. And the Presbyterian Church was one of the first churches in a lot of frontier towns, was the Presbyterian Church. But it started in England all the way back in the 1500s. Baptist Church, 1607, John Smythe, we would call him John Smith, started the first Baptist Church in England. John Knox, it was Scottish, he developed the Presbyterian Church of Scotland. We'll talk about some more in a little bit. What was different about these people, they were all standing up against the Roman Catholic Church. All right? All of these, John Knox, Thomas Cartwright, John Calvin, John Smythe, all of these. And of course, those churches that we just mentioned are still in existence. All right? And even back in the 1600s, there were people talking about how if churches were to be united, they had to be united on the Bible and Bible alone, which of course was the motto of Thomas and Alexander Campbell in the American Restoration Movement. Well, then we come to Henry VIII. He had a lot to do with the Protestant Reformation. And that was in the 1500s also. And of course, his controversy was he had married Catherine of Aragon. Then he divorced her, which he, of course he wasn't allowed to do. They're and married Anne Boleyn. And they had a daughter, and their daughter was Elizabeth. Well, Catherine and Elizabeth have a lot to do with the Roman Catholic Church in England. And then Henry VIII has his wife killed. They were only married about 1,000 days, and she's called Anne of 1,000 days because they were only married 1,000 days. and he had her head cut off. You know, she was decapitated, Tower of London. Well, Mary, the daughter of Catherine, she came to the throne. She became the Queen of England. And she was an extremely devout Catholic. So she started persecution of anybody and everybody that said anything against the Catholic Church. That's why she was called Bloody Mary. Because she had countless people killed that wouldn't conform to everything the Roman Catholic Church started. I'm sorry. It might. I don't know why I'm coughing. Sorry, getting choked up. My wife and I are both getting choked up.
Dry mouth.
Thank you. Probably so. My students would say I was just talking too much. But what do they know? They're teenagers. So she was called Bloody Mary, and like I said, had countless people killed. There were even some Roman Catholic priests that were trying to, you might say, reform the church a little bit. Hugh Latimer and Nicholas Ridley. But they were more Anglican, more Church of England priests than they were Roman Catholic, even though there was a lot of resemblances.
Called the
Lollards.
Oh, yeah. They were the first ones that translated the Gospels into English.
We talked a little bit about the Lollards a few weeks ago, but yeah, they were an important group as well. And they were kind of part of the Reformation too. They were trying to reform because they wanted people to have the Bible instead of just listening to the priest.
Well, that's something else. I'm sorry, but that's something else. That's where the Masons come into the lodge, because they were actually Masons. And the Catholic Church at this time decided that's what the Crusades were about. They were going to go to the Holy Land.
Oh, yeah.
Destroy the original text so that all the people would have would be the right translation of the Bible. Well, Masons would smuggle the original text back to England, and then they would build cubby holes and stuff in the church building. To protect
the Bible, right.
Protect the original Hebrew.
Yeah.
And that's the reason they're so secretive, because the Catholic Church, this time they found out about it, they would kill you, they would kill your family, they would, you know. So,
yep.
And then when the Reformation happened, then they went in and said, okay, part of Matthew, Mark, and in the cathedral, it's solved, and they had, so they had the original things with King James mission.
Yeah, it was. We talked about a few of the people that lost their lives because they were trying to get the Bible into the hands of, you know, regular people. And many people died because of it. You know, we have it today. It's so easy for us. I remember, I think it was a couple weeks ago, I talked about how people would pay money to go in and read the Bible for an hour. They would pay money to be able to do that. Well, Mary was killed. Bloody Mary was killed. So her sister Elizabeth then took over the throne. And she gave people religious freedom. They could be Catholics, they could be Protestants, whatever. And then, of course, we come to King James, and he's the one that had the King James Bible done. Also about this time, the Puritans started in that basic time period. Then in 1727, we have John Wesley. And he started what became the Methodist Episcopal Church. Now, there's a church that sounds a little bit like that today that is a black church. And you'll see it in a lot of southern states, and you'll see it out front in some of their church buildings. But he's considered the founder of the Methodist Church. He started in the Episcopal Church. In other words, he was a priest in it. But what he wanted to do was, he kind of wanted to reform the Episcopal Church. He thought there were things in it that was too much like the Roman Catholic Church. He thought there was too many rituals, there's too much formalism. So he wanted to change that. So he's basically considered the founder of that. In 1669, a little bit before Wesley, there were people that were already starting to see that reforming the Roman Catholic Church wasn't going to work. In other words, they had to go all the way back to the New Testament church, what you found in the New Testament, and restore the New Testament church. And several of these were in England. There was one that was north of Liverpool called Tottlebank. And they were trying to go back and restore the Church of Christ as it was seen in the first century. And their, all of their efforts and their writings or so forth are in a book that's still in existence, that you can actually still read. It's called The Church Book at Tottlebank. They taught that each church was under its own governing. There was nothing beyond the local church. There were other things as well, but that was a huge change back in the 1600s. Then in 1824, a group pulled away from the Tottlebank Church and became the Kirkby Church of Christ. And that church is still in existence, if you go to England today. And it was started in 1824. So we're talking about almost 200 years that one's been in existence. Some other dates and origins of some other denominations. The Dutch Reformed Church started in 1567. And it was called that because there were a group of people, Dutch people, who were persecuted, and so they fled to England. And at that time, they were allowed to worship as they please, so they became the Dutch Reformed Church. I mentioned Puritanism was started about the same time. They thought that the church should be organized like the New Testament was. Preachers should only be responsible for one church, not more than one. And the officers of the church should be chosen by the church, not the state. Quakers started in about 1650 with George Fox. Already mentioned the Baptist Church, 1608, and the Methodist. So that brings us up to the mid-1700s. And what you're seeing happening is the Roman Catholic Church had gotten so corrupt that even many people in the Roman Catholic Church were seeing that it needed to be reformed. And there are all kinds of problems. We talked about Martin Luther and his 95 Theses. We talked about that. Of course, that was well before the days of John Calvin. And then all these other people who were, they had the right idea, that the Roman Catholic Church needed to be reformed, but that wasn't what really needed to be done. The church needed to be restored. So they didn't go back far enough. What they did was good, just didn't go back far enough. So we're going to start looking at people who saw that the Reformation just wasn't what it needed to be. It needed to go much further back, all the way back to the New Testament times. And we're going to see people in all kinds of different countries kind of all seeing this at the same time. You know, we mentioned a few in the 1700s. Well, we're really going to see in the early 1800s a lot of different people in Scotland and England and different places that were saying, we've got to go back to the New Testament and leave everything else out. Church traditions and all that's got to be thrown out the door. We've got to go back to the Bible and the Bible alone and nothing else. And so that, Lord willing, is where we'll start next Sunday morning when we start seeing what is commonly called the Restoration Movement.